It is hour number three of Midday with Trey and BK. Coming up at 12:50, we crosstalk with Rod Babers ahead of the Rodcast from 1 to 3. And shooting the bull at 12:30, faking a hate crime, probably not a good look. And in mere minutes, we're speaking with comedian Bert Kreischer, who was such an animal while in school at Florida State that his life inspired the movie Van Wilder. I'm Trey Elling. Brad Kellner is across from me. Adam Wagner behind the glass. Text us. The Specs text line is 337-3776. And give us a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave, at Brad Kellner, at Not the Fake Wags, and at Bert Kreischer. That's the handle for our next guest. Let's go to the Vaqueros hotline now. Welcome Bert Kreischer to the show. He's a comedian, actor, writer, and host. Check out his third stand-up special, Secret Time, on Netflix right now, as well as his cooking show, Something's Burning, on the All Things Comedy YouTube channel, where Bert and other funny people cook and shoot the bull with one another. I actually watched an episode with our buddy Sam Tripoli over the weekend. And most importantly, you can watch Bert do his thing live in Austin tomorrow as he brings his Body Shots World Tour to the Paramount Theater for two shows on Friday night at 7 and 9:30. First show is sold out, but go to BertBertBert.com for tickets to the 9:30 and a whole lot more. Bert, thank you so much for the time. How you doing today, man?
What a professional intro. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I was blown away to see our friend Sam Tripoli on your cooking show when I was watching this weekend. He's one of my absolutely favorite people in comedy right now. And is it true that he was actually one of the first people to come up to you and really introduce himself when you moved out to L.A. in 2001?
Yeah, he changed. I've always said this, but Sam changed the way that I looked at this business. Because in New York, it was a little bit of a competitive thing. And I came out to L.A. We were doing a thing for National Lampoon's, and I was intimidated. I'm sitting there by myself, not talking to anyone. And Sam just walks right up, and he goes, "Hey, man, my name's Sam. I think you're hilarious." And I was like, "What?" Like, no one called anyone funny in New York. Like, no one was nice to anyone. They were just like, yeah, good set, whatever. He was like, "You're hilarious, man. Are you going to do that cops, touching the cop's face joke?" And I was like, "I am." He's like, "That's a great joke, man. I can't wait to see it." And then I was like, "Wow, who's this guy? He went up before me and absolutely murdered. I mean, murdered." And I was like, "That guy did not have to be nice to me." But yeah, I love Sam.
Very cool. Now, you're banging these tour dates out. This week alone, you're doing New Orleans on Thursday, Austin on Friday, Dallas on Saturday. You're about halfway through this American tour before heading overseas to Europe, Australia, and New Zealand. And most of these stops have two shows to them as well, like here in Austin on Friday. Is this the most that you've ever pushed yourself on a tour, and does fatigue ever set in?
Yeah, fatigue set in last night in Vegas when I got on stage and realized I've been pushing my voice too hard. I had like a panic attack 5 minutes in going, "What if my voice just stopped working?" You know what? I think all road comics, and I always classify myself as a road comic, we always look at it like, your Friday early show, you're like, "Oh, I got a long week ahead of me. I still have two on Saturday and one on Sunday." I looked at this because of the schedule, and I was doing two shows every night. I just looked at it, and I was like, "This is what I do for a living." It's like a guy who goes over and serves in Iraq. That's a horrible analogy comparing myself to those guys. But when you go, "Oh, I'll be gone for a year," you don't, like, count the days. You just go, "This is where I'm at. This is where my head is. This is what I do." And so I just have written off this, that these 5 months are dedicated to this hour, dedicated to stand up, and dedicated to the tour. And so you don't get lonely. You don't get overwhelmed. You just focus on the material and, like, almost like literally don't look for the forest. Just look at the trees. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure, for sure. Yeah. Have you ever had a moment on stage, whether it's losing your voice or just kind of a writer's block or something, where you're up there and it just doesn't hit for you?
No, I don't really get. Sometimes I'll be like in the Machine story, because I still tell the Machine story every show at the end of the show. I think a lot of people have come out to hear that, and I don't want to be the guy that lets them down. But when sometimes in the Machine story, my mind will wander on, like, "Hey, I wonder what I'm doing after the show. Hey, hi, how you doing?" I just got recognized. And so my brain, by the way, what a horrible way to recognize me talking about the Machine story, going, "God, this guy won't let it go." But
that's funny.
Sometimes in the Machine story, my mind will wander of, like, "Hey, I wonder where we're going tonight. I wonder if I should eat something." And then I'll forget where I am in the story. I mean, I'll be telling it, but my brain will be wandering. I'll forget where I am in the story and then just be like, hey, does anyone know what I was talking about?
Man, that is funny. Now, Bert, whether it's the machine story, are you talking about how you hung out with Will Smith or a couple times, or the Raleigh Massimino basketball camp story that involved Ralph Sampson at the end of your most recent stand-up special? For me, you're about as good as it gets when it comes to telling stories on stage. Is that something that you learn from a family member or maybe somebody else? And what's the key to telling a good story?
No, I learned it ninth grade at Jesuit High School. It's an all-boys Catholic high school. So the currency wasn't like, are you good-looking? What car do you drive? None of that stuff. It was like, can you hold court at a table and make a bunch of dudes laugh? I remember practicing stories in my head, walking across campus, getting ready for lunch, being like, oh, I got a banger from this weekend. And then I think, you know, me and my buddy Ari Shafir were obsessed with, like, great stories, and this is when he started doing the storytelling show, and I really found my legs doing that storytelling show, and I was like, oh wow, I really am good at telling a story. I think the most I learned though is in the machine story. I told the machine story for 4 years where it bombed, and I couldn't figure out how to get it to work, and trying to figure, it's like putting a car together from scratch. Once you do that, like literally soup to nuts, then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I know a lot of tricks that I can do to get a story going. The number one key to a story is it has to have an ending. That is, any story without an ending is not a story. So many people tell a story and they're like, and then we all just went back from camp. And you're like, what? Wait, what happened to the guy in the wheelchair? And even with the machine story, you know, I thought the end was, so I understand you're the machine. That was the end. And then one day I realized if you plant a sapling in the middle of the story, like a plant a seed, then you can harvest the sapling at the end of the story. That's when I asked that B, this is Russia. In the middle of it, I realized, oh, I could tag it on that. And then once you say that, there's a very rewarding feeling as an audience member to know, oh, this story's now over and it's time to applaud. It's really kind of crazy. By the way, you can get caught up in this and make all your stories super nifty, and then your act looks like it's a TED Talk.
I like that. I like that. Bert, when did you decide? I mean, was it ninth grade you were talking about at the all-boys school, or was there a certain moment that you're like, man, I should be doing stand-up comedy for a living. I've got a chance to be really good at this thing.
It was the first time I realized I could do stand-up for a living. Rolling Stone magazine wrote that article about me. They called me the number one party animal in the country, and a radio station put together a stand-up show. And I thought I could do it. I knew I was funny, but I went up and I did 30 minutes, just improv, no script. And I got done and I called my dad. I played baseball with this guy, Brad Ragge, who pitched for the Twins.
Yeah.
And my dad, my whole life was like, God, that guy's going pro. And I said to him, I was really angry when I was a kid that my dad wasn't saying I was going pro. And my dad was like, buddy, there's certain things in life. When you see something do it, you're like, that's his thing. That's what he's going to do. And when I watch Brad play softball, that's his thing. He's going pro. The first time I did stand-up, I called my dad, and I was like, I found the Brad Ragge thing with pitching. I found mine. It's comedy. And he was like, all right, and you got to do it. And so that was when I, after that one stand-up, I was like, oh, this is what I'm doing for the rest of my life. No questions asked.
Now, you referenced the Rolling Stone article that literally called you the biggest partier and the biggest party school in America in the mid-1990s at Florida State. We won't go too much into that because you've talked about that time and time again on various radio shows and podcasts, and probably on the stage too throughout your career. And also the fact that you are the guy who was the basis of the movie Van Wilder as well. We won't waste your time by having you talk about that again. But what I'm curious about is that you were a hard partier at Florida State during one of the most successful eras in college football history. Just how big of a Seminoles football fan were you at that time, considering how well drinking too much and good college football go hand in hand with one another? And do you have any favorite memories from getting to watch that FSU football team in Tallahassee so many years ago?
Oh yeah. Oh my God. I was diehard. I'd never experienced a football game like that when I was a freshman at college. We had the Bucs in Tampa, and that was when they were the Yucks. And so to go to a game and have your team win was insane for me. I was like, wait, what's this? And it was just, I mean, I was diehard. I was obsessed. I still am obsessed. Not as much as I was, but my easily my favorite memory, my senior year, We're playing Florida, and we're down in like the fourth quarter. I think we're down like 23 points, and we come back and we win in the last minute, and everyone stormed the field. And I'd always wanted to storm the field and pull down the goalpost. I'd always seen that and been like, that'd be so cool. Dude, it was the best, just standing on the field, getting with cameras. We'd have cameras with us, not phones, just cameras. I got a picture of me on the field after that game. Oh, that was the best. That was the best memory I've had from that whole. Oh, it was the best, dude.
Now, do you have any good memories from hanging out with Florida State players off the field, maybe picking up co-eds with Charlie Ward, bonging beers with Derek Brooks, cheating in Spanish class off of William Ford, anything like that?
I graduated next to who's our running back who went on to play for the Bucs and then the Falcons. His mom was a cop and she was shot.
Warwick Dunn, yeah.
I graduated and I sat directly next to Warwick Dunn in graduation. And he was sitting next to me, and the cameras, they were taking pictures of us. And the guy said, hey, can you guys get closer? I want to get a picture of the two of you. And Warwick Dunn looked at me, and he goes, oh, you're that party guy. I said, yeah. And he goes, oh, cool. He's like, what are you going to do now? I said, I'm moving to New York to do stand-up. He's like, oh, nice. So what are you doing? He goes, I'm going to play for the Bucs. I was like, hey, man, I got a lot of friends in Tampa. If you ever want to go fishing or if you need any hookups in Tampa. And he looked at me dead serious. He's like, I don't do drugs, man.
Oh, that is awesome. And Bert, I'll be honest, I was 3 years old when this article came out, so I didn't hear about this until way later. But you know, how much did your life change around campus, around Florida, and how often were you known for this article after this thing came out from the Rolling Stone?
It was huge. I mean, like, I don't think I've ever experienced anything that overwhelming since in my life. It was when the TV wasn't what it was today. There's no reality shows, and print magazines were still huge. I was overnight one of the most famous people at that school, without a doubt. I mean, I'd walk into a bar and everyone would look at me, and like film crews were coming down to hang out with me. ESPN sent two actors in a tour bus down to party with me, and it was Johnny Knoxville and this other guy, and we had a tour bus. We partied in the tour bus for a week. It changed my life overnight. I was doing radio interviews every morning, and I literally was like, oh, who cares about school? I'm ready to go to New York and get famous. It's the best thing that ever happened to me. It's the greatest thing that ever happened to me. It changed my life and moved me in the right direction. Who knows what I'd be doing if that article hadn't been written, you know?
Yeah, no kidding. And you have a life to thank for that article in a way, because as you talked about in the book, as you've talked about in interviews before, it was one of those moments where you have the opportunity to either seize this and capitalize on it, or just let it fall by the wayside and squander it all together. And you chose the former, and are obviously living a much better life for that. Now, you've mentioned a couple of times in this interview that you're from Florida, grew up in the Tampa area, went to Florida State. Of course, Florida is a state that has this reputation of doing and having really messed up things happening there. Pretty much every radio show and podcast in America has Florida to thank for the endless supply of weird news type content. What's the most Florida story that you've ever been a part of?
I mean, so many. There's things that I don't even recognize that are so Florida, and people go, what? Like I said to someone, like, yeah, you didn't grow up with two friends without tongues? And they're like, what? I was like, yeah, I had two friends without tongues growing up. Tongueless Brett and raw. Without a doubt. I mean, I saw a dude get struck by lightning. That's pretty Florida. Growing up in Florida, lightning was super prevalent, you know? And so, yeah, well, I saw a dude get struck by lightning. He was collecting shopping carts at a Publix and at a grocery store, and in a thunderstorm, and my dad and I were walking in, and my dad looked at me as like I was collecting golf carts, shopping carts, and he's like, buddy, that's called natural selection. And then the guy got dotted
oh my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, dude.
Jeez.
It's like certain things about Florida. Like, I remember that kid got attacked by an alligator at like Universal Studios.
Yep.
And everyone was like, can you believe that? And I was like, no, I totally believe that. That is, no one went in our lakes in Florida. Are you out of your mind?
Hell no.
Like even when you went water skiing, when you fell, the boat flew back to get you because there was gators everywhere.
Oh,
yeah, Florida's Florida is an interesting place. I appreciate it a lot more now that I'm not living there. But I was just there doing the Tampa and Fort Lauderdale this past weekend. And there are things that I say in Florida that, especially, I mean, there are things you say in Florida for audiences that you can't say anywhere else in the world, especially anything racially. They're like, oh yeah, I remember that.
Amazing. And Bert, your signature, one of your many signatures, is at the start of your stand-up bits. You take off the shirt and usually throw it in the crowd. Where did that come about? How'd you come up with that? And how has that become such a hit for you?
I did it because I remember we were talking at the beginning of this and I was saying, like, when you're a road comic, sometimes on Thursday or early show Friday, you can be overwhelmed by the weekend and you get a little depressed. You miss your family and you're like, ugh, I want to be just home. I would rip my shirt off when I got up on stage and it would make me giggle. I would think, how silly. And I would then put myself immediately into a better mood, and people would cheer. They'd laugh. And I was like, yeah, I'm just here to have fun. And so one night I ripped it off and something happened in the audience and I moved forward. And then like 15 minutes in, I was like, oh wait, my shirt's still off. And this woman just goes, keep it off. And so I kept it off for the whole show. And there was a comedian there. And he was like, dude, he was like, I can't believe you just did stand up with your shirt off. He was like, I couldn't do one joke with my shirt off. And you did your whole act. And I just, at that point, I thought to myself, okay, if I can do stand up with my shirt off and it works, then when I go back to do my special and I put my shirt on, it'll be murderous. Because I've been doing it with like weights around my ankles with my shirt off the whole time. And then when I went to do my special, I was like, I'm not going to put a shirt on now. I've had my shirt off for 10 years. And Showtime was like, no, we want a shirt on. And I was like, I can only do it with my shirt off. And now I've pigeonholed myself into like keeping my shirt off. It's so funny too. Anytime anyone takes their shirt off in stand up, everyone's like, dude, you're ripping off first. So we all take our shirts off at times.
Oh, I love that. Awesome. And I'm glad you mentioned missing the family on the road a little bit, because I was reading through your book this weekend, and while there were plenty of hilarious stories being told in this book, some of which you've shared for us already today, I wanted to ask you something about something that struck me as pretty profound when you were describing having kids as leaving you with this vulnerable feeling that didn't exist in your life prior to that. I have a 4 and 2-year-old right now, and I feel the same way. Like, death is something that has never scared me, but the thought of dying became much more unsettling as soon as my oldest kid, my daughter, was born into this world. I believe your daughters are several years past toddlerhood now. As they get older and become more self-sufficient human beings, does that vulnerability fade away too?
No. And now you start getting worried about other things, about like, yeah, I'm still a mess. Like, they're at home right now with our friends. And like, they were watching movies last night. We called them right before I went on stage and they were eating popcorn. And the first thing I said was, hey, sit up if you're eating popcorn. Don't lay down. I don't want you choking on popcorn. And they're like, Dad, my daughter's like, God, I'm 14. I can eat popcorn. And I'm like, no, I don't care. I want you sitting up. Please, I'm going to be up all night if I know you're laying down eating popcorn. It doesn't go away, man. It sucks. It's the one thing I wish they could give you a taste of it before you had kids. I guarantee you there's a lot of people that be like, oh, no, I'm not looking for that in life. That wasn't what I signed up for.
Fascinating. And there's a story that's kind of served as a preface for in the book. And I'll have to admit that I looked online for the story, and I don't really see you as having told it many places, or at least many places that have advertised it. So would you mind sharing the story that involved the time your then three-year-old daughter, Georgia, tripped, knocked her teeth out and broke her jaw, required emergency surgery? You were actually on the road when it happened and flew back to be there for your wife and daughter for the surgery. Would you mind sharing what happened the day of, both before and after her surgery?
Yeah, I was in Cincinnati when they called. I was right about to go on stage. Leanne told me there had been an accident. And so I did a stand-up. I got on the flight the next day. Billy Gardell from Mike and Molly. Billy Gardell stayed up drinking with me all night because I couldn't stop crying. I was freaking out. Got home. We go in the next morning to do emergency surgery at 8 in the morning, and they can't find a vein to put her under. They got to put gas on her. But she's freaking out so bad that they're afraid that if she takes too big a breath, they're like, we need her to have steady breathing. We need you to put the mask on her. It'll be less traumatic for her. I'm like, I'm a mess at this point. My wife had told me to take Xanax, and I did, but I'm still a wreck. I put the mask on her, and I realized, oh, my God, what if I just killed my daughter? And then I'm thinking, like, weird thoughts. Like, what are we going to do with the body? Do we take it home? Like, oh, my God, I'm freaking out. We go into the waiting room, and I'm crying. It's 8 in the morning, and I'm sobbing. And in the waiting room, it's like there's a couple people, but there's this one black chick who sees me crying uncontrollably. My wife's crying, and she's trying to, like, make eyes with me and calm me down. I'm not having it. I'm just sobbing, hands in my head. I'm sobbing. 10 minutes, the longest 10 minutes of my life go by, and they come out and they're like, your daughter's okay, and everyone applauds in the waiting room. We go out, we grab Georgia. She's got gauze in her mouth. There's blood on the gauze. We're holding her in the receiving room. This is a very expensive tenant. We're holding her in the receiving room, and we're finally like, she's gonna be okay. We're gonna be okay. We're getting out of this. And the curtain opens in the receiving room, and it's the black chick. And, like, just walks right in. It's like, it's hard being a daddy, isn't it? And I look at my wife, and my wife literally jaw on the ground, almost dropped my daughter, Georgia. And I'm like, huh? And then I look over at the black chick again, and it's Whitney Houston.
Whitney freaking Houston.
Dude, it was, I mean, she sat with Georgia, was playing with her hair, and we didn't say a word. She just said, it's really hard being a daddy, isn't it? She goes, it never gets easy. It never gets easy. She goes, I got the same worries every day. I cry just like that. Like, and you're just like, we didn't say a word. She got up, gave us a hug, and went off to get her surgery. And then we were like, what? And then our anesthesiologist, I don't know if I talk about this in the book. I just feel like it's grandstanding. You know, I don't know, but our anesthesiologist was super expensive to get an anesthesiologist. And we were broke. I didn't have any money. And we went out, and they're like, no, Mrs. Houston picked it up. She required the reason we got in at all was because she was getting oral surgery, and she brought in an anesthesiologist. So that we literally piggybacked off her anesthesiologist, and she picked up the tab. She was like, nah, I got it.
Whoa. No, right. I don't think you did mention that in that book. That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't mention that, but it's the whole – it was really kind of like a – like, when we called up the thing, they were like, no, this doctor can see you right away. And they're like, they have an anesthesiologist ready. And I guess we never really thought about, like, how hard it would be to get an anesthesiologist. But it was Whitney Houston. She was having oral surgery. By the way, she looked beautiful when we saw her. So, yeah. And the best part of that story is, not the best part, but this is the way a comic works. The day she died, the day she passed, my buddy Tom Segura called me. And he goes, dude, Whitney Houston died. And I was like, oh, my God, shut up. And he's like, how great is that for your story? I go, what do you mean? He's like, I mean, you can tell that story about Whitney Houston. Everyone's going to freak out. And you can say whatever you want at the end that she said to you. So you can say, like, oh, you're my favorite comic. Me and Bobby love you. And no one's going to dispute it. Oh,
man. Yeah, you and Segura and Ari Shaffir, who's been on the show before, and Joe Rogan, of course, you guys have a very entertaining friendship, at least on how it plays out on Joe's podcast. And Sober October is a hilarious bit and one that's gone on a couple years now. And just so you know, you guys have served as a quasi-inspiration for our show. We're actually taking a week next week to try and go without cell phones, and that's inspired by Sober October. I don't know if any of us can do it that are trying this, but any advice for trying to get over advice for a short period of time like that?
By the way, it's so much easier to quit drinking and drugs than cell phones. I don't know how you're going to. They wanted to do that 1 year. Ari was like, we need to get off social media. And I was like, well, then that's not fun. How's anyone going to track it, you moron?
Yeah, there may very well be cheating going on some part, but we're trying to make whoever cracks, we're trying to make them go through some sort of humiliation.
Are you going to put all cell phones in a clear box in the studio?
I think what we're going to do is we're just going to give it to somebody that we can trust in our building, and then we just have to ask that person for it back if we decide that we can't make it. It's a Monday through Friday bit, so if we can't make it from the start of the show on Monday through the end of the show on Friday, the person asks our receptionist for it back. She gives it back, and then she lets the other two know so that guy is going to have lunch meat thrown at him or something. I'm not sure what the punishment is going to be just yet, but it's got to be something bad.
I have lunch meat. I haven't heard that in so long. Do you remember when that was a thing in like the 90s?
Maybe subconsciously, that's where I pulled that one out of. I do not recall that one, though. That's funny. It depends on what kind of lunch meat also. Like, I feel like the lower you go on the lunch meat totem pole, the less you think about that person. You throw bologna, that means you don't think very much about that person.
Dude, I hooked up with this chick one time, and the first night we made out, I was like, she just reeked of bologna. And I was like, oh, that's crazy. I was like, who eats bologna sandwiches, you know, like these, like in college? And so the next night we hooked up, same thing. She reeked of bologna. I go, she must be eating bologna. She must love bologna. And then the third time we hooked up, I spent the night there. And she still smelled like bologna. We woke up in the morning. She's like, you hungry? And I was like, yeah, I'll just take one of those bologna sandwiches. And she was like, I don't eat bologna. And I was like, oh, my God. Her natural smell was bologna.
Oh, my gosh. I think I just pulled a rib there. He is Bert Kreischer. Bert, thank you so much for the time, man. Safe travels to and from this state, and we'll definitely keep promoting the shows happening here in Austin on Friday night. 7 and 9:30. Go to BertBertBert.com to get tickets. Also, give him a follow on Twitter, at Bert Kreischer. Bert, thank you so much for the time today, man.
Thanks, Bert.
Hey, thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
Good stuff. Fun conversation.
Oh, my goodness.
That dude's hilarious, man. Yeah, check out his Netflix stand-up special. I don't know if he's got any tickets left for tomorrow night's show.
It was like random single seats for both nights at one point earlier this week. I checked yesterday. One of the shows is sold out. The other one is not just yet, but well worth it if you can get in for that.
No doubt. Definitely check out the Netflix special, though, as well. Thanks to Bert for his time. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will shoot the bull, an update on the Jim Boeheim story, an update on the Jussie Smollett story, and Coda out some cheddar cheese. Tell you about that on the other side. It's Trey and BK. This is The Horn.
Back here on the Midday Show, thanks again to Bert Kreischer for joining us. Very funny comedian. He'll be in Austin tomorrow. Speaking of very funny comedians that are in town this weekend, Brian Posehn joins us in studio tomorrow during the noon hour. Looking forward to that, as well as a conversation with the guys from Onnit. They have a really cool event, free event this weekend out at Onnit for your junior high and high school athletes. So expect Jeremy Hills and perhaps another guest in from Onnit Academy to talk about that one as well. Before we get to shooting the bull, BK, do you need to let people know about the Horn Bash Barbecue Cook-Off? It's the Louis Miller Barbecue Cook-Off. It's actually back for Horn Bash in 2019. That's May 4th at Buck's Backyard in Buda. You have a chance to register your team right now. Now, we're only taking 41 teams, but we're doing this by lottery. So go to hornbash.com to sign your barbecue team up to be a part of the barbecue cook-off at this year's Horn Bash. You never know. You could be one of the lucky winners.
Why are we only taking 41 teams? Probably behind-the-scenes conversation.
And I lied with 41. It's only 40.
You were just giving the Dirk number, giving Dirk a little bit of love.
That's where I thought you were going.
Damn, should let everybody in. I don't really care about the people. I just want more food.
It's a space issue.
We're getting very big in space. Good thing we've got the Space Force coming. Looking forward to that.
Spacing the key in sports and in life.
I still can't get over Carlos Boozer's tweet, man. Trying to tell Zion Williamson to get well soon.
Did he delete it yet?
No, it's still out there. He tagged Zion National Park instead of Zion Williamson on Twitter.
Fool.
Unbelievably funny. Feel for Zion. We'll see. It's been a storyline. We talked about it in hour one if you want to listen, our opening segment, but whether or not Zion Williamson will play another minute of basketball
hey,
for the Duke Blue Devils.
I think I may have found your likeness.
Whoa! Well, that doesn't look like me.
Sure it does.
What do you mean? Is that even a dude?
Yes.
For the gratification doll that's in my likeness? We got to get it more customizable than that.
Man.
It's got to be me, man.
They start to get expensive.
What are we just going to like tape over my face over this doll then? Is that what we're going to have to do?
Save
some money? It's still very expensive.
Who do we get to purchase this thing to, by the way? I don't want this going on one of my debit cards.
Ain't going on my
or
debit
through
card.
Through my browser.
I'll take care of it. That's fine.
Okay.
I'll explain to the parents what's going on there.
I'll take it out for a meal.
I don't have any wife or kids who have to see something like that.
You will take it out for a meal. And then will get some seven in heaven for that,
too. Why is it wearing all those clothes, man? That's not what the bit is.
I don't think that we can just let the thing go nude when we bring it out to Horn Bash to give people the opportunity for seven in heaven with the
gross
Brad Kellner gratification doll.
Not looking forward to that. Horn Bash will be fun, though. Get your They're free tickets. We'll tell you how to get them coming up a little bit later.
Should we dress it up in Star Wars character?
Nope.
Just a joke.
That's your bit. Yeah, not a Star Wars guy. That wouldn't make sense. But if you fantasize about me wearing Star Wars stuff, then there's your opportunity, Wags.
That's true. For your date, we can do that.
Chewbacca.
Weird. I don't know what that was either. All right, we got bits to do. This whole show has become a bit today. Let's shoot the bull.
No kidding.
Shooting the bull.
Shooting the bull, sponsored by Audiovisual Consultations, BK.
It is. 255-8678, the phone number to call to get the home TV setup of your dreams. From our guy, Tom McKay, proud listener of the horn. Good dude, also. Get the TV setup that you've always wanted. Surround sound. You can do surveillance to keep you and your loved ones safe. Those cameras around your house, around your yard, they got you. AVConsultations.com or call them, 255-8678. Trey.
Yes, and BK, boy, this is quite the headline here. Drunken woman mad about losing money in pinball machine, brawls with cops and EMS.
Whoa!
Now, I'm bringing the story up not just because the story itself is pretty nuts.
There's like three stories in that headline. The drunken woman is generally a funny story. Angry over a pinball is great. And then brawling with cops and EMS? Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah, her name is Kylie Cunningham. She's 26 and she lives in Hamilton Township. And she now faces various charges from an incident that police say started at the Slate Belt Bowling Alley. She lost money in a pinball machine and started flipping out towards the employees who were not refunding her money that she put into a... I mean, how much money are you putting into a pinball machine that requires you to flip out about
it? She lose like 75 cents?
Yeah, exactly. It's a quarters bit at some point. So eventually cops were called. She was told to leave this bowling alley, but instead she said, no, I'm not leaving the bowling alley, despite the fact that she knew cops were coming. She then requested more alcohol. When she was refused the alcohol, she threw a cup of water in the face of an employee before heading out of the bowling alley. Eventually, the cops caught up with her and a guy walking along the road that I'm guessing this bowling alley was on. When asking for her identification, the officer noticed the smell of alcohol. She then refused the request, and after yelling obscenities, slurring her words, and losing her balance, the officer determined that she was under the influence of alcohol to the point that she was a danger to herself and others. At this point...
So that's a PI right there, right?
PI and apparently getting arrested as well. They told her that she needed to chill out, that she was going to be taken in to sleep it off for the night. She did not like that news. She decided to start trying to fight the cops. At this point, the EMS had also been called out to make sure that everything was okay. She starts trying to fight them as well as they try to, I don't want to say subdue her, but try and get her into the back of the ambulance to take her to the hospital to help her sober up before the cops can then deal with her. Well, eventually, they do have to use physical force to restrain her and take her into jail as well.
Jeez.
And
she's single? 26?
Well,
I'm pretty intrigued by
this.
Let
me tell you, the reason why this story is so intriguing is because we have had... Occasionally, it is attractive women who are guilty of these things. This may be the most attractive. This is the mugshot right here.
She looks happy to be there.
Of Kylie.
Wow. Well,
happy or crazy.
It's a good smile.
Maybe a little bit delusional.
A little bit of crazy eyes going on there, for sure.
Kylie Cunningham. And checking out the Instagram profile as well.
Look at you, you millennial.
Yeah.
What is that?
I just had to check.
Instagram?
This.
I don't even have one of those. You have one of those?
No, I just type in a person's name in Instagram.
Good save.
Most
there,
of them
guy.
Are public. So yeah, looked it up and she is a crazy brand of attractive, BK, and perhaps she's for you.
Kylie, K-I-L-E-E. That's crazy right there.
That is a white trash spelling for that name, some would say.
Yeah, all right. How about this? We haven't talked about this story. You've been able to hear about it any other outlets. On the internet, on television, the newspaper. That's why I don't read the newspaper. Wherever. You've undoubtedly heard the name Jussie Smollett over the past couple of weeks. His story started... Well, he's an actor, first of all, if you don't know. His most recent role has been in the HBO show Empire. Is Empire HBO or Showtime?
Empire is... Showtime? Wags is saying it's showtime.
Showtime show. I beg your pardon. Smollett says he called police and told them that he was attacked around 2 a.m. on Jan 29th. Claimed that two masked men shouted racist and homophobic slurs, as Smollett is black and openly gay. So they shouted racist and homophobic slurs as they beat him, put a noose around his neck, and poured some sort of chemical on him.
That would be really terrible if it actually happened.
And that story obviously blew up. It became huge news.
Yeah.
People lost their minds, and rightfully so. It would be a terrible, terrible story if something like that happened, which I guess it actually happened, but after weeks of police investigation, the Chicago PD has found that this whole thing was staged by Jesse Smollett, and he has turned himself in early this morning, hours after he was charged with disorderly conduct for allegedly staging that racist and homophobic attack. Turned himself in, made no statement to police at about 5 in the morning. What actually happened? Smollett had staged this thing. He paid two men, Ola and Abel Osundairo, paid him $3,500 by check to stage the attack. And he told the brothers where to buy the noose and the masks and the hat that they were wearing, and planned the entire thing out. Actually, these two guys were arrested, the two brothers who carried out the attack. After the attack, they flew to Nigeria, ended up flying back to Chicago.
What?
They had tickets taken care of so they could leave the country and then come back to try to avoid being caught.
Oh, my gosh.
The police were ready for them when they got back to the States. I think because they ratted out Smollett, they're going to get off scot-free on this deal. But yeah, Smollett, man, he's likely going to jail, could face probation up to 1.5 years in prison. And this sucks, because this type of stuff actually happens.
Yeah.
Racist and homophobic attacks, and we're trying to put an end to these type of things, and Smollett not really helping the cause right there by doing something like
what
this.
What a small individual.
And he did it to boost his career.
Yeah.
His role on Empire was diminishing. It was fading. He wasn't as popular of a character, and he wanted to become, he wanted to do something that would get his name out there more. And something like this, if it were true, being the victim of a racist and homophobic attack, you know how Hollywood works? That would likely get you some more fame and notoriety. So he did this. He staged it himself. And, man, the CPD superintendent, the Chicago Police Department superintendent, said, how can an individual who has been embraced by the city of Chicago turn around and slap everyone in the face?
Oh, that is such a phony statement from the Chicago cops, by the way. Give me a break.
Said it was a publicity stunt that Chicago didn't earn and certainly didn't deserve.
There are so many examples of the police in that city doing things that are really messed up as well. Like, I guess I understand just from the official statement standpoint, saying something like that, and I don't disagree with it, but give me a break, dude.
So there
you go. Hypocrisy. By the way, Empire is on Fox, apparently.
Way off.
And
0 for 2. Sorry.
Just to...
I don't watch it.
Just to piggyback on what you had just said, BK, the act of a hate crime is obviously one of the most terrible things that exists right now. And it's scenarios like this, and this goes back to the Me Too movement from the last couple of years as well. Scenarios that are fudged versions of what we need to treat so seriously does a disservice to everybody who has actually gone through that.
Yeah, everyone who's gone through it and the folks who are working hard to try to prevent these type of incidents from
Absolutely.
Happening in the future. It's a damn shame, man. Very selfish move from Jesse Smollett. I hope this dude deserves to be arrested, man. I don't know the actual legality. I said up to 1.5 years of prison time. That's what is coming from this article I'm looking at. But a damn shame.
And thank you to all of you who are helping to correct us on the Fox, not Showtime. But see, that's what I was wondering in my head. I was like, it's definitely not on HBO. I don't watch enough Showtime to know one way or the other. I could have sworn it was on network TV, though, and apparently it is.
Yeah, I was thinking Billions, my bad.
I don't watch too much of that stuff. But all right, sad story there. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will wrap up the midday show, send you off to the rest of what's going on here on The Horn. It's Trey and BK. This is The Horn. Like that.
All righty, that is it for today's midday show. Quick crosstalk with Rod Babers. Find out what's coming up on the Rodcast from 1 to 3 today. What's up, Rod? What's happening on the Rodcast today?
What's going on, fellas? We'll talk a little Zion. Everybody was disappointed in that.
Yeah, no kidding. Mm-hmm.
Get some better shoes, Z.
We'll get into that a little bit. And we'll talk some Texas football. Texas football made another hire for the support staff.
They did?
Ooh, yeah.
We didn't even get to that.
Yeah, man.
We didn't get to that. All right, keep it tuned. Rodcast 1 to 3. Chad and Kevin, 3 to 7. We're out of time. Thanks to Bobby Jones and Bert Kreischer for joining us today. Thanks to all of you for texting and listening throughout the program. For the fantasy sports guru, the Marine across the glass, Adam Wagner, thank you for your service to this country and this show. For the Sultan of Cynicism, the Vomit King, the male Amy Schumer, Trey Elling across the table, I am BK, and we will be back to get a pop at the same time tomorrow. Until then, let bygones be bygones. You can go and get the hell on. You and your mama. We out of here.